不是笑，不是笑。Sisters, I'm very, very happy have this some period to share some of my own experience and also learn some of your concern through your questions. So sometimes you see. Two questions. I got some new, what say, points which I never thought of before. So sometimes very helpful. So I really happy to have this opportunity. Now I'm just wondering. The among the audience,
I'm wondering whether in this audience, what proportion constitutes those who have been attending the lectures this morning and yesterday?
No, hand, yes.
If you could raise your hand.
There's then many new. Dear Lord, do you know? Do you know? The topic, where?
So the topic of this evening's talk is ethics for the new millennium.
As you know, basically, wherever I go, I always try to promote human values and then religious understanding among the different religious traditions, closer relations among the different religious traditions. These two things I always give in my mind. So now this topic, the Kasasilovya.
Ethics.
Ethics for a new millennium. And now recent month, many places, people really showing some kind of, I think, looking forward to new millennium, and in some cases with excitement. And I notice in Paris, on the tower, the remaining days of this century put there. Last December, I was in Paris a few days, so I noticed. So each day, the number reduced. So people so much are looking forward to the new millennium. And then in some cases, it seems some people may expect when the new day of new year of the new millennium come, or the sky will be a little different, and the more pleasant something. And I think these nature disasters or climate sort of big change also becoming normal. I think that kind of expectation. Thus, I think, I feel, I often see the exchanges with such people, oh, new millennium, nothing new. Just like our sort of normal new day and new month, nothing special. So in a way, sometimes people, including myself, when I was young, the new year, I was very much excited. So before the day of the new year, sometimes even sleep not well, because it's too much excitement. But then, eventually, some people, you see, showing that is that kind of the similar attitude, then I usually is telling them, to me, every day is new year. Morning, dawn, fresh, everything fresh. Even last night, yesterday, even you have some kind of unhappy mood, and after good sleep, a peaceful sleep, the next morning, everything fresh, everything new. So there's a new year, isn't it? New day. So what is important is the whatever is a new year or a new day or a new millennium, new century, we should utilize that time in a properly, more constructive way, more meaningful. Look, time always go. Nobody can control time. And perhaps I did a half joke. Look, what is time? There is no absolute sort of solid thing. Of course, the past is past. The future is important. Everybody can consider future is important. The future depends on present. And the past and future, on the basis of present, we can define way. Make past and future. So present is the basis to make past and future. But then, if you further ask, what is present? Year, or I think century, year, I mean decade, year, month, week, 24 hours, an hour, minute, second, but just 1 second past. After 1 second future, no present. Isn't it? Then how can, without a basis, how can we say past and future? There's no present. So if we really, you see, analyze the present or time, difficult, just one day, I think about day, this time, I left, I came from India almost directly, just a few hours stop in Tokyo. I left India evening on 9th. I'm quite sure that's truly 9th of October. Then morning around 8:10, I reach Tokyo, and a few hours I spent. Then the evening 10th, I left Tokyo. I'm quite sure that's 10th evening. Then I reach Los Angeles, morning of 10th. So that particular day seems evening come first or morning come later. Then I thought, what's the day? What's the date?
No, what date?
Just a mere designated by our mind. If there is 9th, 10th, 11th, something solid independence, then it is impossible. Evening of the 10th come first, a morning of 10th come later, it is impossible, isn't it? So time is just simply, I think, our own mental creation.
Constructed.
So anyway, that's the joke. But in any case, we are in time. So time is very important. So now my serious point is, time we can't control, always moving. Since our birth, always moving. As a Buddhist monk, perhaps some people may not sort of sound nice, but as a Buddhist practitioner, it's the end of our life. Also very living, very alive. Second by second, we are going towards end of our life, our death. Nobody can control that. It is fact. Actually, death is part of our life. So, now the question, we can utilize time properly. So, it is entirely up to us whether we utilize time properly or, wasteful. That's up to us. Then, again, now, if we really concern about the use time properly, then from just now, let us try to be a good person. Then, you see, automatically, as the time becoming meaningful. So, key thing is here. We can start just now. So that's sort of, I think, the nature. So, what is the meaning of a good person or nice person? It's not much matter about wealth or about, fame or even education and physical strength. These are not very important when we, in the terms of the question, nice person. Well, nice person really means warm heart. If you have really warm heart or compassionate heart, that means sense of caring, or full of sense of caring of others' problem, or sense of sharing with others' pains, and sense of commitment, sense of responsibility, sense of discipline. I think person who have these qualities, these things, then we can say a nice person. So therefore, these are very, very important in our, in our daily life. Now, another thing, sometimes you see people feel the warm heart, sense of caring of others. These things are something good, something admirable, right? But in our day-to-day life, in our own future, my own, as for my own interest is concerned, these are not much relevant. Some people have that kind of feeling. Now here, this is the main point. I believe that is wrong. The good heart, compassionate heart, is very much relevant to one's own happiness, one's own happy future. The reason is, firstly, according to our daily experience, we can sort of, according to our daily experiences, it is quite clear the physical pains and comfortable and mental pains and comfortable, between these two, the mental thing are more important, more powerful than the physical. If your mind at a state of calm, happy mood, then the physical, even not very comfortable. Even you're sick, if your mind very pleasant, very happy, peaceful, you can enjoy that kind of pleasant experience. The other hand, your mind not happy, frustration or agitations or full of, say, anger, hatred, jealousy or fear, then the physical, all the good facilities, and even if you're surrounded by good friends, that person cannot be happy. So this shows the happiness or mental pain is more powerful, more superior than the physical. Now in the terms of mental happiness, money or materials, of course, some are relevant and some sort of the source of happiness, but the basic thing. Now here I want to use my own my own language. My English is a broken English, and the vocabulary also very limited, and these days I a little bit is exhausted, so therefore that also is sometimes difficult to express fully, even through my broken English. So please give me permission to speak some sentences in my own tongue. Okay. Chidanga, and the shiva kada kasure and the shiva jimi nada. Oh, the point I forget. Adan karu kada. Ha. Oh, dear, right? Dimare. Then that I remember. Now fail to remember. What to do? That point. Now doesn't matter. Now let me think. So now I can't remember. Doesn't matter. In any case, the point is that. Oh yes, now I remember now. No. Good.
And If, on the other hand, we were to believe that the external conditions such as the material facilities and so on are really the sufficient conditions for our happiness, then this would follow that if you have all the facilities around you, then such a person must necessarily be happy. But this is not the case.
However,
if a person possesses a certain quality of mental stability and a sense of mental composure and calmness derived through certain ways of thinking or contemplation or reflection, such a person then, regardless of whatever circumstances or situations such an individual may find, one thing that is for certain is that person, because of that inner quality of stability, is able to enjoy the state of tranquility and happiness.
시작을 하더라도 Namadi, Tunutmori. That Shimadi, Samutongaji, Tane Yongaji. That is me, unique charity.
So basically, what we see here is that when we speak of a sense of satisfaction, fulfillment, and happiness, we can, from our own experience, we can see that there are two kinds of that kind of sense of satisfaction or fulfillment. One is the kind that we derive through our interaction with the material world, through the sense objects, primarily through the senses. However, there is another level of sense of satisfaction and happiness or fulfillment that we derive, but not so much in relation to the material world, but rather through either contemplation or through thinking or through reflection. And that kind of satisfaction happiness is can be said to be superior. The reason is because the first kind of level of satisfaction or sense of fulfillment that derives mainly through the senses, so far as that level of experience is concerned, there is not much difference between the human beings and the other species of animals. Whereas the second level of experience is something that is very unique to human beings, that is derived through thought processes and reflection.
The main demarcation between human mammal and other mammals is human intelligence. So this is our unique. So if we utilize that intelligence for happiness, that's a unique thing. Otherwise, just using food, shelter, sex, these things, or is either temporary satisfaction out of fighting, these animals also have the other species of mammals also have the same experiences. So now the question, the development of sense of caring of other, the altruistic attitude. Now these, although animals also can develop limited altruism, but the altruism, almost I think infinite altruism, which we human beings can develop, that other species of mammals impossible to develop. So now you see, more you have that kind of altruistic attitude or sense of caring of other, that really makes our sort of outlook differences. Now here, the moment we think ourselves, say, me, 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 then our whole mind focusing very limited area, narrow field. Result, even tiny problems of oneself appears huge, very big. So result, more anxiety, more fear, more worry. And the moment expand our mind to think others, then our mind widened. And under that circumstances, one's own problem then will not be significant. Same problem, but because of the light, I think lens. You see, they had the same object, but lens widened. That small, that is the same subject, appears small. Focusing, it appears big. So the mental reaction will be different. And then also automatically, when we when our mental perception widened, then you see these sort of unwanted things also, you see, can see from different angles, and also looks some distance. If just think oneself, then these small things, you see, then you see, seems very close to oneself, and almost impossible can see from other angle to that same problem. Because you see, I think generally every sort of thing have different aspects. So different aspect. Looking from different angle, we can see different aspects clearly. So therefore, one tragic thing. From one side, yes, very bad, very painful. But if you look from another angle, that could be some useful thing. So that kind of, you see, the attitude really helpful to reduce our anxiety. So more altruistic attitude, more compassionate attitude, really bring us inner strength, more self-confidence, less fear. Just think oneself, narrowed our mind, then, you see, the more anxiety, more sense of insecurity, that usually happen. Then also, I think 2 or 3 years ago,
I participated in a seminar with some medical scientists in New York, and at this seminar, one of the speakers, one of the scientists, presented the result of his long study, which seems to suggest a correlation between those who tend to use disproportionately high levels of first-person pronoun, I, me, and mine. There seems to be a correlation between that and greater proneness to heart-related diseases.
So, you see, that report really seems to support my view. whether other people agree or not, to me, you see, that is a very, very sort of, very powerful sort of argument. So, my own experience, widely, through more wider angle. Then, you see, my mind really then can sustain easily the calmness. If too much focus to one particular, then you get more disturbances. Therefore, for sake of our own happiness, now one technique is sense of concern for other. Is the one of the most powerful method or technique to sustain our own peace of mind. Number one. Then they are physical health. Here also some relations. The constant fear and agitated mind is very bad for health. Calm, tranquility, or self-confidence, less fear, is very good for health. So everybody is really taking care about one's own health, taking vitamin or taking some other many pills. Some of these pills, one day, or a lot of appetizing. Then after a few years, then some physicians, some doctors say, oh, something wrong with that. But we already consumed. So this shows we really, you see, very much because of that care about our own, you see, health. So the health also, I think, you see, there are other ways and means to sustain good health. That is through, I think, through adopt a right kind of mental attitude. So, in a way, not expensive way. Our own mind, analyze, my mental attitude change. No need a doctor, no need a big hospital. You can improve your own physical conditions, isn't it? Mm. So, therefore, I think both happy mood and physical health.
Good
health. I think both feel peace of mind is very important. Peace of mind, just recently drawing breath.
Withdrawing.
Withdrawing our mind from these troubles. And usually people call meditation, close eye and remain like that, because of motionless breath.
No.
Motionlessly. That people call meditation. That's not helpful. Problems still remain there. You just avoid your mind from the problem. Not helpful. But you see, seeing the problem from different angle, from wider perspective, the same problem, looking, the problem reduced. That is the wise. I think some kind of different meditation, just to look the problem. And only, I think, the technical method is widen our mind and look at that problem, that unwanted thing. Yes, you really can be, I think, good meditation for our peace of mind. Now, actually, here, according to Buddhist sort of Buddhist practice, we call analytical meditation. These kind of things are analytical meditation. Actually, every our daily life, analytical meditation actually, you see, that's happening for money matter. Even you see, for I think the negative way, how to cheat the other person, how to bully other person. Here also analytical meditation involved. Isn't it? Think, calculate. That's the analytical meditation. because of the human intelligence, analyze the situation. That's the analytical meditation. That really change can influence in our perception. So very important. So therefore, the practice of compassion, another word, sense of caring of other, these are directly benefit to oneself. So, Linda. somebody shattered something. You are the same.
So what we find here is that although in this altruistic activity, generating sense of concern, although the focus is others, but you yourself derive the benefit.
Now, another question. I think, you see, looking from another level, society or family. Often, I think people believe my interest is nothing to do with this society. Disregard what happened. Disregard this. In reality, we are part of the society. If society suffers, if society gets more trouble, so all the individual as a part of the society will suffer. And then also I think they, in America or some other countries also, now the crimes, the killing or these, also you see, sometimes, quite
prominent.
But these, some occasion, I participated some seminar about the causes of these crimes or unrest among the youth. Mm. So they all the many participants. You see, many of these is the social
workers,
social workers, and some is the psychological sort of experts, things like that. So many, you see, express the current unhealthy situation among the society, particularly among the young youth or younger generation, is due to lack of human affection, and particularly in the family, those children who grown up, they lacking human compassion, human care. So the result, they themselves eventually, you see, when they become elder, they find it very difficult to develop taking care or respect of others. Because they themselves, when they grown up, are lacking these things. So therefore, they more peaceful, more friendly society is very important to one individual. So many people complaining about these unsafe and these things. Then these are, I think, something like symptom. They often, even national level or international level, sometimes it seems some problem. You see, they become very
very obvious.
Then people pay more attention. But things are, and in reality, today's event not come just suddenly. No. Today's problem, today's event, you see, happened because of yesterday and previous month or previous year or previous decade or even previous generations. Cause and effect, as a law of causality, and things are moving certain direction. Result, then at one time, at one moment, then become burst. So like unfortunately, this tragic situation in former Yugoslavia and also in Chechnya, in this area. I feel because of negligence in the past many decades. So when this is certain, comparatively some freedom to express these deep sort of, recent or kasa.
Resentment.
No, resentment or unhappy sort of feeling in deep inside. Then you see these things really become burst. So these are, I think, from the these are the what say I think one example. At the time that is to do to yin do the negoria thorama choche. And you yingi yongbe the kuriya dotmeting.
So what we see here is a situation that when causes and conditions are moving towards a particular direction, often we tend to ignore the situation. But then the causes and conditions have reached such a point of explosion, at that point, in fact, that even if we notice it, there's nothing, not much one can do to stop it.
So, therefore, the preventive measure, as a preventive measure, that's the very right, right approach. Not, you see, wait till, you see, things really become a disaster. So therefore, when everybody is taking concern about the society, then, you see, we have to make, I think, long plan for transformation of the society or the improvement of the society. Here, of course, education. I think very important. Education not only just give information to brain, but also is it a warm heart. Education and the sense of sense of responsibility, sense of commitment, is a sense of taking care of others. These must develop side by side. In modern education, my impression is the people really paying much attention about the education, and the facility also very good, but they development of the human spirit or development of I think the sense of caring of other, these things we are not sufficient to pay attention. And in family also, sometimes the family life becomes difficult, then there's nobody paying attention about these basic human values. So usually, my sort of belief is when the separate education institution started in Europe 1,000 years ago, then at that time the church or temple taking care about the moral ethic side. Then the influence of the church become less and less to the society. So eventually, and then also the family life also, this is somehow grumbling way. As a result, nobody take care about the moral ethic side. So that, I think, one of the, I think, the source or causing of our problem. So when I say the moral ethics, not necessarily with religious faith, this I think important. There should be two kinds of spirituality. One spirituality is with faith, religious faith. One spirituality without faith. Simply recognize these basic human value and try to sustain and promote. So in any way, in the society, we have to make every effort to promote these basic human good qualities or human values. We can't put all these responsibilities to government or those institutions, but each individual has the potential, have the responsibility. Therefore, each of us try to cultivate these good qualities and increase, and then expand, make example to others. First, one's own family, within one's own home. Yes, share these human good qualities, particularly towards your children. Through that way, your home full of, I say, joy, full of sort of
affection.
Safe. Something really. As soon as you reach, you enter that home. Everyone full smile, open. Very happy. So children grown under that circumstance, that atmosphere, will be much healthier, much compassionate. So the transformation of the society initiative must come from individual. So now actually in modern time, now the concept we and they and no longer there. My interest and their interest or others' interest is very much linked. Therefore, the taking care of others' interest is actually taking care of my own interest. If you destroy your neighbor, this reality we can see. Again, now the sense of caring of others, sense of responsibility, these are very much related with the better or happier society. So, these are, I believe, the good preparation for happier future, and also through that way, it is the good preparation for new millennium. This is one thing. Then the second thing, as I mentioned before, the closer understanding among the different traditions. There are sort of differences among the different traditions, particularly in the field of philosophy, big differences, some are fundamental differences. But then, I always put this kind of a question: what is the purpose of these philosophies? Then we can see the same purpose, help to humanity, improve humanity. That's why we can see the all major religions, they all carry one message, that is love, compassion, forgiveness, tolerance, these are a contentment. All teaching, carry this message. So therefore, all these major religious traditions, their philosophy, the message or teaching are actually strengthening or increasing these basic human values. So here, all religion have its common, common aim, common goal, and also have the same potential. About the heaven, or about the nirvana, or moksha, reincarnation, these are individual business. What we are concerned most is humanity. Now here, all religion have the same potential to make better human beings. Now the method is different according mental disposition. To some people, a certain philosophy like the Christianity or Muslim or Judaism and some other traditions, which their main faith is Creator, God, Creator. So that philosophy, tradition is much more effective to some people. To some people, other tradition, like Jainism or Buddhism, the main concept or main belief is one's own sort of, motivation or one's own karma. So oneself as a creator. So they looks big differences, but the same aim, same effect, according to different mental disposition. So therefore, reasons to have different religious tradition. Some people, because of too much trouble in the name of religion, some people say, it could be also better just one religion, just one world religion. That is, I think, wrong. It is
It's much more beneficial to have the diversity of religious teachings that we have now, because of their greater ability to serve humanity, because of the diversity.
So variety of people, we need a variety of religions. That's very clear. Then each one have its own unique thing. So we can enrich one another. So here, if we look from that angle, what is the purpose of these different traditions, different philosophy? Then the answer, yes, all meant for humanity, meant for peace of mind. Then I think one example, practice of tolerance. This is some Christian practitioner or some Muslim practitioner. You see, one occasion, another one, a seminar, the one is mentioned. There's actually in Jerusalem, one Palestine or some Palestine is a student. Usually, you see, little sort of uncomfortable when they pass through the street. Then, after some time, that student, you see, try to look the other person who usually get a little uncomfortable. You see, that person look in the, what's it, the image of God. That practice immediately change that student's fear or uncomfortable feeling. So you see, the practice of tolerance is that also one, I think, very powerful sort of method. So like that, you see, these are each have unique sort of practice, very helpful. Now here, one thing I want to share with you, whether you perhaps I wondering, you see, what is your opinion or your feeling? That is the contradiction. The concept of one truth, one religion, and the concept of several truths and several religions. Looks these two things are contradiction. I feel my answer for that is, in the terms of one individual, there's one truth, one religion, is extremely important in order to develop conviction, in order to practice sincerely. You need that. In the terms of several people, because there are different mental disposition, we need several religions, several truth, concept of several truths and several religions. So on different
So, we can try to reconcile these two aspects of religious thought by understanding them in a different context, from the point of view, from different points of view.
And here, I, since you see, some years, I practice the four methods. One method, meeting with people or scholar, mainly scholar, from different religious tradition, and then exchange and discuss what differences, what similarities. Then, second, the meeting between genuine practitioners from different religious tradition. When, you see, that take place, the not academic level, but rather deeper experiences. Through that way, you can learn the other tradition, the value of other tradition. And then through that way, you can develop genuine sort of admiration or recognition about the value of other traditions. And my own experience, like my meeting with late Thomas Merton, and then also a few occasions, some very good Christian practitioner, mainly monk or some nun, in Europe as well as in America. I think one example I often mention. There's one occasion in Spain, the Montserrat. When I visited there, one Catholic monk, came. I was told that monk spent few years in justice behind the Montserrat, one small hill. He spent 5 years so. So he, especially, he came to see me. So then, besides the meeting with group, then spent some time, just two of us. And then his English is, I think, because of that, I think the another word, compare his English, my English is better. Yeah. So therefore, I have more courage to speak with him. We spent some time. Then I asked him, I was told, you spent 5 years in the mountain as a hermitage.
Hermit.
And he answered, meditate on compassion. Oh, I just, you see, felt something. Wonderful. Christian monk. They practice compassion. Meditate so many years. When he answers that, in his eyes, some kind of expression there. So such meeting, such sort of opportunity, really opens the other person's mind. So then, that really develop deep sort of admiration or recognition, the value of other tradition and potentiality of other traditions. That's number two. Number three, group pilgrimage to different places of the different religious traditions. I started this practice in one ancient Indian city in India. There are many different temples, including church and mosque, and some different Hindu temples there. So I started from there. So I made, as a pilgrim, all these temples, and spent just a few minutes and silent meditation. So with this spirit, in Europe also, I visited some, like Lourdes in France, and also Rome and Jerusalem, and some other places. This really gets some kind of the experience, deeper experience of the those holy places, sort of, vibration.
Yes.
Very good. When I was in Lourdes, the in front of image of Mary, I just stand. Then a feeling, here on this spot, the millions of people, especially some, sick people, which is seeking blessing and get inspiration. Yeah, this place, this great place. And when I reflect on that, I get some kind of immense of the joys and appreciation. So like that, these are one method. So actually, some of my Christian friends now is starting practicing this. So last year, last winter, some group of Christian brothers, sisters, came to India at Buddh Gaya, the most sacred Buddhist site. they came Bodh Gaya and spent a few days, and we had some seminar, and each morning there about 30 or so Christian brothers, sisters sit under Bodhi tree where Buddha enlightened. Very Buddhist. About 20 minutes is a silent meditation. It's wonderful. This is actually a return. My is a participant to their place a few years ago. There I got one difficult job. That is explanation, some sentences,
some passages
of Bible, Gospel, to Christian. I'm Buddhist. A Buddhist monk explaining about the Christian Gospel. And each morning, before each session, Father Lawrence, you see, each a few minutes before each session, you see, he came and he teach me. I listened. Then, of course, you see, my own sort of understanding, from Buddhist perspective. Then I, you see, explain this passage. Oh, they enjoyed very much. So later, some of my old Christian friends, they really praised me very much.
So they shout a lot of praises on me.
So like that. You see, I think the serious practitioner, serious Christian, they later told me after they listen, my explanation, they have deeper sort of, conviction, deeper sort of faith. So like that. So they come, you see, as a return for that. So these, and then I think good news, they. I think 5 or 6 years ago, my first visit to Jerusalem, the same spirit as a pilgrimage, not as a tourist. Then this year, in April this year, another sort of gathering in Jerusalem. So 5 or 6 years ago, when I first visit, just me alone, a Buddhist monk taking pilgrim in holy places of at least the three major religious traditions. That's Judaism, Christianity, Muslim. So this year, 15 people from 5 different major world religious traditions. So there's progress, isn't it? So we same manner, you see, we visited all these places, and some, you see, the prayer, some silent meditation, like that. So it is moving, this direction. So then fourth, like Assisi meeting, all leaders, you see, come together, and from one platform, you should pray or speak. This is a then through media, of course, millions of followers of different tradition, then they get some kind of very positive impact. So that's very important. Then there's fifth, that's not mine, but from Bishop Tutu. Bishop Tutu. When I exchange, you see, these views, then he had one fifth. That is the one, you see,
So Bishop Tutu suggested that we should add one more, which is to ensure that all the religious traditions speak in a united voice on matters of global concern and particularly those that have to do with injustices.
Yeah. So then I promised him, oh, since then I will speak, I will put that to the fifth point. So, as promised, I mentioned here. So in spite of some unhappy sort of activities or events in the name of religion, what do you call fundamentalist or fundamentalist. But I think overall, closer understanding among the different religious traditions is growing, definitely. So here, I also feel I made little contribution in this respect. So these are... So now, as a conclusion, finally, I want to share with you, I think 20th century, we learned many experiences. Some experiences really painful. Some experience very unthinkable in previous century. I think achievement through science and technology. And then also other issue factors. I think the humanity becoming more mature. Result, there is, I think, sound ground for better century, more happier, less conflict. And here, I think, the concept of non-violence. Now, look in South Africa. Now, non-violence in the spirit of reconciliation is now become political reality. This is something wonderful under the leadership of Nelson Mandela. These things are, I think, the positive development. So in any way, and also is it talking about the reduced nuclear weapons, then also eventually I think that can lead the complete sort of ban or destroy, eliminate of nuclear weapons. These, now there are some signs. Therefore, the one thing I think, while we're talking about non-violence, that does not mean we remain indifferent. No. We should be engaged fully, very actively with all these problems, but through non-violence. So here, the method to solve the problem is dialogue. The point, keep in our mind the 50-50 interest of the other party, 50 interest of my party, 50-50-50. I think in reality, that's the only possible, right? Not like ancient time. Ancient time, one party, bigger or more powerful, then defeat other. So 100% victory this side, 100% defeat other side. Now that's impossible now. And various reasons, economy reasons or many reasons. Militarily, the other side may be weaker, but in the long run, very difficult. So therefore, under present circumstances, you see, the only thing is the dialogue. So let us try to be a next century will be century of dialogue. This century, our century, whether we like it or not, become like century of violence. So let us try to have next century of peaceful, century of dialogue. And then here, you see the importance. One, I think, crucial thing is, while I mentioned, you see, how to improve our inner tranquility through sense of compassion, through sense of caring, and reduce hatred and anger, jealousy, that is, I usually call, inner disarmament. Now, with this, we also, you see, should make attempt external disarmament. These two type of disarmament, step by step, gradually, with big patience, with determination, I think, then world can change. So that's all my talk about the good preparation for new millennium. Thank you. Okay. Now some questions. Good.
How can we help one another to love more, to have more tolerance towards our differences and forgiveness of each other? How can we help one another
to
have
Actually, so long human intelligence remains there, or I think so long human being with human intelligence remains there, different opinions or conflict always there. And the contradictions itself, nothing wrong. Contradictory opinions. Through that way, we can synthesis some new ideas, new force. I provided not let go violent way, but it's a compromise or dialogue, or willing to listen others' view, willing to admit or adjust one's own view. I think that's the one way. I think that's the basic way to achieve dialogue. And then long run, of course, I mean the background, yes, as I mentioned earlier, if we realize my interest and other interests, whether we like it or not, we have to live together. And if I help other, I will get a benefit long run. These kind of understanding, these kind of awareness. That's, I think, only way. And then here, one suggestion or opinion. In the school, right from the beginning, I think one in any curriculum, I think there should be, if possible, this is one, you see, what's it, subject dialogue. So the student from the beginning, you see, the concept of dialogue should be familiarized. So practice, let them practice. Then if we, I think through that way, one day it can be like the student return to home. If two parents fighting, the student say, oh, this is, no, this is wrong. Dialogue. I think that can be possible. So in this, the minds of the student, the way to solve differences is dialogue. Once that is familiarized, then in the society or in home and everywhere, some conflict or some differences is happen. The immediate sort of reaction from the mind is how to solve through dialogue. I think that important. Otherwise, you see, we always see influence in our mind violence, fight. Differences, yes. I think that is the. That we can change. Yeah. Next.
What is your view of the proper role of high technology in human societies?
Technology itself, nothing wrong. Of course, the technology go extreme. It's dangerous because technology itself no feeling, and technology itself is in no power to judgment. So if things become too much mechanized without a human control or without a human feeling, then that's a disaster. But technology remain under human control, under human sort of, I think, sense of responsibility, is a sense of, let's say, compassionate, a sense of responsibility, I think that technology is useful.
How do you keep your optimism in the face of the many years of exile and the power of the Chinese Communist government?
Firstly, you see, I believe justice, right? Justice and truth. Obviously, we can see the events of the world history. The power or force which come from gun or military, for temporary, very powerful, very decisive, but long run, it cannot sustain for long. The other hand, the power or the strength of justice, truth. At the beginning, it appears weak, but that can sustain through centuries. So justice power always remains, and sometimes increasing. So that's one is my belief. Then also China, the people from China, is actually in the process of changing. Today's China, compared 15, 20 years ago, is much changed. Although just recently, the Chinese government try to follow the previous sort of doctrine, party, military. I think now difficult to carry in China, because the Chinese masses now already have new taste, and also the information. The government cannot control fully about information. So therefore, this is one thing. Then Tibetan side, the Tibetan, inside Tibet, their Tibetan spirit is extremely strong, particularly among the younger generation. According to some information, it seems, I think, reliable. Chinese government, some time ago, carried some survey among the Tibetan students, younger generation, in China proper, in mid-80s, when this program started, or this program is not the mid, I think this program, I think. That program started in mid-80s. That time is some Tibetan, including late Panchen Lama, opposed, you see, this scheme to bring several hundred Tibetan young students every year to mainland China and to get an education. So, some survey among them secretly indication without mention one's own name. So through that way, they carry some survey. And 75% of the students indicated Tibetan freedom. Very strong. Very, very strong. So therefore, the another information I was told, that say the independent student in China proper, 90% favor about freedom. So in any way, the high sort of percentage Tibetan student who actually isolated from their own family or their own sort of community, but you see the Tibetan spirit seems very, very strong. So these are the then another, I think, the thing. I'm not seeking independence. I'm not seeking separation. I'm seeking genuine autonomy, genuine self-rule, which the Chinese constitution provided. And also in early 50s, and yes, in early 50s, Chairman Mao Zedong and also later Chou Enlai, they often say the Chinese central government considered Tibet case as something unique, not like any other Chinese provinces. But now today, this really unique thing, that's the Tibet is the poorest sort of region of people from China.
However, unfortunately, the uniqueness of Tibet really seemed to be limited to the fact that it is the least developed and the poorest region of People's Republic of China, and also the most suppressed region of the People's Republic of China.
And then, any sensible leadership or concerned people, of course, eventually, will realize their top priority, top most concern is stability and unity. The stability and unity under gun is superficial, artificial, superficial. So genuine stability and unity must come from within. So therefore, sooner or later, the Chinese government policy regarding Tibet, I think, will change, should change. So that's the basis of my hope, my optimism. But then another thing, the Tibetan issue is the issue of 6 million Tibetan people. They are right, they are culture. This is not just my sort of interest or something. So this is not a question of, one generation's interest. But this is, generation to generation, this struggle will remain. So therefore, I'm participating here. One day I may no longer there, but the Tibetan nation will remain. They carry this sort of struggle, isn't it? So a struggle, the goal, if it materialized my lifetime, then I should participate. If not materialized my lifetime, then I should not. That's no logic. Yeah. But basically, I think my lifetime, I think things will change. Meantime, of course, finally, the understanding between Chinese and Tibetan ourselves must find. So the solution must find between Chinese and Tibetan. But in order to materialize, in order to reach that kind of understanding, the world community can help. So here in America and also in Europe, in many places, many people, I think all levels, really showing concern and sympathy. I very much appreciate. And particularly in America, among the students, there is a support sort of free.
There are students for Free Tibet.
That movement, within last few years, really rapidly increased and very active. I very much appreciate. And then also, yes, then also I think very important, that is among the Chinese. Is it some writers? Is it some sort of artist? Some philosopher or thinker? Now, more and more number now showing their support, their concern about Tibet, as a result of better awareness. So this is, I think, very, very encouraging sign.
Final question?
Yes.
What are your thoughts about the growing gap between the haves and the have-nots in the world?
This is a very serious matter. Very serious matter. Global level, also there's a gap. Northerners, industrialized nations, rich, surplus. And the same world, the other part, even basic requirement or basic necessities also is not sufficient. And then within the country, within the nation, for example in America, I was told the number of billionaires are increasing. Actually, what is the number? You see, a few years ago, either 2 years ago, so one, my American, you see, friend told me some time ago the number of billionaires is 17. Now more than 40s. Then just recently in Chicago, I just want to share you this sort of this topic. And then he told me number of billionaires in America more than 400. What is true? Which is correct? 40 or 400? Do you know? Do you have an idea? Oh, then we should make survey. In any way, my point is that in any case, number of billionaires is increasing. Poor people still remain poor, in some cases even poorer. What is that? America. Democracy, liberty, freedom, these are your ancestors' sort of main slogan. People consider America as a champion for liberty, equality, and freedom, these things. So, this is a huge gap, rich and poor. And this is one of the American weakness. Capitalism, good, of course. You see, making more money, a dynamic force. But if this gap remains and increasing, it's not only morally wrong, but practically also the source of problem. We have to address this problem, global level as well as national level. So here, of course, I think my use is silly idea. Maybe I think silly. On few occasions, in order to make money, in order to increase your profit, yes, adopt capitalism, dynamic capitalist forces or system. Then they, out of the profit, should keep the socialist sort of idea. From the out of the profit, they at least some portion must spend on the education and health in the weaker section of the people, bringing them equal. So, of course, this is firstly, you see, I have no direct sort of responsibility, but long run, we have to think very seriously how to reduce this gap. And now in China also, now this gap coming. Very sad, very strange. A socialist country, a country led by Communist Party, but then letting you see this gap. Very, I think, I can't understand. Sad. So like many Buddhist monk in Sri Lanka or in India, Buddhist, but at the same time, socio-economy theory is concerned more leftist. I also belong to that. Thank you.